Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. Welcome you to this Monday, October 17th edition, special edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. Of course, that's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. Excuse me. That is the York College radio station. Well, it's a special two-hour edition because today we are going to be examining the life and legacy of the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. The show is entitled The Genius of the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. What a powerful lineup. And at 6 o'clock, we get to talk about Sonia Sanchez, too. I'm certainly going to tune into that. Longtime friend, somebody I've worked with over the years. And, oh, beloved sister Sonia Sanchez. So that's a great, great package here on WBAI. All the more reason why we really got to support the station. In fact, as soon as I complete this the program today, I'm going to go online and drop a couple $100 into the kitty. Hope you'll perhaps support me in doing that, because we know that WBAI is a citadel for resistance and transformation and needs those resources. Well, today we have a very, very powerful program lined up. It's got a lot of pieces to it, and I'm really delighted to have that 20-year amazing veteran who's been with us for a while. Somebody called Reggie has been here a long time doing this work, and certainly congrats to him for his many, many years of dedicated service. With his support, because he always helps to bail me out when I get to stumbling and fumbling, we are going to have this tribute to the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. His 81st birthday was October the 8th, and I had occasion to be in or to be going to Evanston, Illinois, and actually participated in a program at Rainbow Push, kind of informal program, and I was asked. I was a surprise guest. I had an opportunity to speak. The more formal program was on October 14th, this last weekend. Every year there are tributes to Reverend Jackson. It dawned on me that there are people who really know very little about the life and legacy of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. There are a lot of people who have forgotten just how brilliant, how capable, able this great man is. And so, lest we forget, we will talk about him today. We have a powerful lineup of people who will be joining us. Actually, I regret that we had hoped and we advertised that Jesse Jackson Jr. and Jonathan would be with us, but both of them have conflicts. Actually, Frank Watkins, the longtime political policy advisor, communication director for Reverend Jackson, made his transition a couple of weeks ago, unfortunately due to COVID. And Jesse Jr. is preparing for that and also traveling. And Jonathan Jackson is a candidate for Congress in the 1st Congressional District in Illinois, and both are not able to be with us. However, we do have coming to us all the way from Selma, Alabama, shortly, the courageous visionary Thaya Rose Turay, the founder of the Voting Rights Museum in Selma, and she and her family and allies and friends are the coordinators of the annual Jubilee, the Bridge Crossing Jubilee. And Reverend Jackson goes to Selma every year. And then, Dr. Julianne Malvo is going to drop in and have a little tribute, her conversation. And, of course, Dr. Malvo has a show on WPFW. And in fact, I did her show this morning. So she'll be with us. And then, you know, voting is so important. You're hearing a lot about it. Well, arguably the heavyweight champion of voter protection, Barbara Arnwine, now the director of CEO of the Transformative Change Coalition, will be a part of the show. Rick Adams, who's an IBW board member, chairman, actually, but he also played an instrumental role. He was the coordinator of the Jackson campaign in Western Pennsylvania, which was where he and I came, kind of met and worked together. He'll be giving his reflections. Baba Gregor Healy, the greatest organizer on the planet. I brought Baba Healy to Atlanta when I needed him to help organize Super Tuesday, and he did an incredible job organizing Super Tuesday. So he'll be giving his reflections. And then we're going to have summary, a kind of concluding summary interview before we get to you, because we're going to turn the phones open to you to say whatever you'd like to say as well. Dr. Ntongolizi Sanyika, one of the great thought givers of our time, dear ally and friend, worked with us throughout the National Black Political Assembly, National Black Independent Political Party, one of the architects of the community economic development movement, former professor, now retired. He's going to offer his summary remarks. I hear tell that Donna Brazile, who the very first, and I remember Donna well, we brought Donna Brazile up through the rainbow and up through the campaign. She became the first African-American woman to actually become the campaign manager for a campaign in the Gore campaign. And she's traveling, but I think she's going to call in during our call-in section. So we want you to hang in there and listen and be a part of this. We're going to have a section of about 25 minutes or so at the end of the show for you to call in. You can take down the number now, 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Take that number down, because we want you to call in from all across the country and in this city, because, you know, Reverend Jackson's campaign in 1988 played an instrumental role in the election of Mayor David Dinkins, the first black mayor. I was behind the scenes. I knew, I watched that develop, and that was a conscious, calculated decision on the part of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. Well, I'm going to offer some reflections of my own before we get to Fire Rose Terray. But throughout the program, we're going to intersperse some actual excerpts of speeches, because Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson was and is a brilliant orator, charismatic orator, electrifying orator. And he had a way of presenting ideas in a where Joe Madison would say, where the goats can get them. And could get it, and you could understand what he was saying as he articulated these ideas. So before I do my reflections, I want to ask that we take a listen to Reverend Jesse Jackson, one of the a powerful speech really about voting, and it's called Rocks Just Laying Around. Let's listen to the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson.
Eight Democrats running for the nomination. This time around, you got a chance and you got a choice. You want somebody who marched for you to get the right to vote? You got a choice. You want somebody who challenged corporate America to hire you and give you contracts? You got a choice. It's choice time. All this talk about qualification. What do blacks know about foreign policy? It's an insult. I was 3 years old. I came into my consciousness. My daddy was coming home from the war. Foreign policy. If he was so dumb, how'd he get over there and get back? If he didn't know foreign policy, why'd they give him a gun? And when they gave it to him, he knew which way to shoot. We know foreign policy. When you buy Honda and Toyota, that's foreign policy. Russian vodka, that's foreign policy. Panasonic and Sony, that's foreign policy. Mercedes-Benz, that's foreign policy. As a matter of fact, we came here on a foreign policy. I know y'all in a hurry. I'm gonna leave it now. It's time for a new course, a new coalition, a new leadership. Somebody got to rise above race, rise above sex, a new leadership, a choice, a chance. Don't cry about what you don't have, use what you got. Reagan won the last time, not by genius. Reagan won when we were asleep. He won by the margin of despair. He won by the margin, the fracture of our coalition. He won by the margin of racial division. He won by default. I close with another story. There's a little shepherd boy named David. Everybody in town was scared of Goliath. Philadelphia, your time has come. Don't stop at the mayor's office. Go on higher. Because you must never forget that about the time we began to take over cities, Nixon shifted the power to the suburbs. And now Reagan shifted it to the states. So you got mayors with more and more responsibility and less power. We've got more and more folk and fewer services. We cannot stop. We got to rise on higher. Little David. Took off his unnecessary garments. Little David. Didn't want to get weighted down with a lot of foolishness. Little David. Took what God gave him, a slingshot and a God biscuit, a rock. Our problem today is, David, we need to organize Pennsylvania and win because we're going to stop the rocks. Go ahead. It's been laying around and pick them up.
That's right.
In 1980, Reagan won Massachusetts by 2,500 votes. Yeah. There were over 100,000 students unregistered, over 50,000 blacks, yeah, over 50,000 Hispanics. He won by 2,500. Ted Kennedy state. Rocks just laying around. He won Illinois by 300,000 votes. 800,000 unregistered blacks. 500,000 Hispanics. Rocks. Just laying around. He won. In 1980, 3 million high school students unregistered to vote. Now they've been registered to draft. Rocks, just laying around. 11 million college students who could have chosen jobs over jails and peace over war, they didn't vote. Now they're crying. Rocks, just laying around. Reagan won 8 southern states by 182,000 votes. But there were 3 million unregistered blacks in them same 8 states. Rocks just laying around. He won New York by 165,000 votes. 600,000 students unregistered. 900,000 blacks. 600,000 Hispanics. Rocks just laying around. 1980, Reagan won Pennsylvania by 300,000 votes. 400,000 students unregistered. More than 600,000 blacks unregistered. Reagan won Pennsylvania by the margin of despair, by the margin, the fracture of our coalition. Your time has come. Pick up your slingshot. Pick up your rock. Declare, our time has come. A new day has begun. Red, yellow, black, and white. We're all precious in God's sight. Our time has come.
Well, that is, was the genius of the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. I mean, just making it plain. One of the things that I've been talking about most recently are those rocks just laying around. Complaining on my social media to whomever would hear, including these recalcitrant, quite frankly, lazy consultants. The margins into this critical midterm election are those rocks just laying around. They focus in somewhere else, looking at some other alternative. But we need to understand what our power is. And here is Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, running for president of the United States, right? Speech made in Philadelphia, in Philadelphia. But really a campaign sort of waking us up and urging us and building. I mean, and you know, he got over 7 million votes, went into the Democratic convention with almost 1,200 delegates. That was after the 1984 campaign was so electrifying. And so, as I was talking to people, I said, look, we don't need to forget, you know, like Roy Jones Jr. once said, he went into a fight with a guy, was a draw, he came back, he said, you must have forgot. We don't need to forget the genius of the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. It was my honor to serve as the executive director of the National Rainbow Coalition in 1987 and deputy campaign manager for the Jackson for President 88 campaign in 1988. Few people have that honor. Few people have that distinction. And I am forever indebted to Reverend Jackson for that privilege, because I got a chance to see stuff that I never, ever would have seen. People that I would have never, ever met, but also I saw developments that I would have perhaps not believed. In Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, if you saw the promo we sent out, he was, in many respects, he immersed, frankly, at the intersection of the civil rights movement and the black power movement. You know what I mean? The black power movement was on the rise. Civil rights movement not dead, of course. He was a synthesis, really, of Martin and Malcolm. More Martin than Malcolm, but he blended. So you saw him in his dashiki. You saw him in his afro. You saw him in his tiki out there capturing that part of the movement and speaking to it, if you will. At an early age, a lot of people talk about, well, nobody want to give leadership, nobody want to pass leadership on, et cetera, and so forth. Well, Reverend Jesse Jackson never waited for that. Brilliant young thinker, strategist, and organizer par excellence, and a true visionary, somebody who understood not only how to rap, not only how to make a speech, but he understood policy, how to translate ideas into policy in a way that no one else has done, that I'm aware of, in terms of that role. People forget Operation Breadbasket. That's where he got his start, Chicago, actually. But, you know, not only was it Breadbasket, there was a time when all across this country, there was a season of Black Expos, where black vendors and business people would come together and you would combine entertainment and culture in these. And one of them that lasted the longest and it still may be going is the Indiana Black Expo. It may still be happening. I'm not sure. But there was a time when these expos were happening all across the country. And it was Reverend Jackson who organized those Black expos all across the country. And eventually he just let them, you know, turn over to local people, and local people did them. He spoke about economic sanctions, understood economic power. He understood what had happened in Birmingham, more importantly, Montgomery. And so he challenged corporate America to, in fact, be responsive to black dollars. And, in fact, any number of people got their McDonald's franchise, their Burger King franchise, all kind of franchises and so forth, because Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson confronted them. And there were economic covenants. As he said, the corporate America, if you're going to take advantage of our consumer power, we want some jobs and we want some franchises. We want economic justice. And then there were the Sally rallies. You know, back in the day when we were looking for Reverend the country preacher, as we would call him sometime, we called him Sweet Jesse. We knew not to call him and ask him to do anything on Saturday, not Saturday morning. Because on Saturday morning, he was going to have the push, the weekly push rallies that still exist. Phenomenal rallies in the heart of Chicago, in the heart of Chicago, in the heart of Daley's machine, Daley's plantation. Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson was organizing. And in those rallies, again, his brilliance, his understanding, because, you know, you got brothers and sisters, when they become politically mature, all they know how to do is speak politics. You know, it's hard line and hard edged, and, you know, we're talking a lot of theory and organizing and all of that. But Reverend Jackson understood that we as black people are holistic people, understood and understands that we're spiritual people, cultural people. And so he would combine in these rallies. When you go to the rallies, man, it's like, whoo, man, it's so inspiring. It's so uplifting, because then you get a good dose of black culture, a black good dose of black spirituality, because you'd have the choir singing, right? And then you might have a poet, you might have a playwright, you know what I mean, involved in it. And then you'd hear, you know, one of his brilliant speeches laying out the issues of the day and challenging us to move forward. And of course, he would also take up a collection. The Reverend Jesse Jackson knew how to raise money. He'd say, "You have not because you ask not." And so he would always raise and raise thousands and thousands, ultimately millions of dollars, because people believed in the synthesis that he put together. And of course, that model was emulated. Reverend Sharpton's rallies are modeled after. It's like a movement church service, if you will, that we knew would be happening on these Saturdays. And of course, Reverend Jackson was referring to a concept that he borrowed from the development of the Urban League in Boston. I forget Mel's last name. That'll come to me. He would do these meetings every week, and he called them the Rainbow Coalition. Reverend Jackson borrowed that concept of red, black, and all the different people of color coming together, whether it was red, brown, yellow, black, white, coming together in a rainbow coalition. And in 1984, he launched an electrifying campaign. Nothing 84 and 88, nobody has ever seen anything like it since. It was an African-American faith and civil rights-led coalition galvanizing a 20th century progressive black-led populist movement. I use my words intensely. I don't have time to explain all that. But not since the populist movement in the 19th century had we seen anything like this, pulling together these different elements under a theme he called economic common ground. What he was trying to say is there's no reason why black folk and brown folks and yellow folks and red folks should not be working together, particularly those who are economically disenfranchised and marginalized and the working middle class. Why are we fighting with each other or turning on each other instead of to each other, when indeed we're being victimized by a corporate class? He called them the barracudas, if you will, raping and pillaging workers. So he talked about economic common ground. And he could do so with authority because he was organizing as a black man, a black preacher, a black civil rights, human rights leader. Because in the previous period, we were sold out on the basis of race, but we were not. This is a coalition that could not be sold out, because at the center of it were black folks who were being organized and who believed in the vision. If you reflect back, it was in the era in 1984, 1988, the era of globalization, capital flight, jobs fleeing from the Midwest and towns like Youngstown, Ohio, where I lived for many years, and Pittsburgh and the so-called Rust Belt, as it became, going to the so-called sunshine states in the South, away from those states that had powerful organized labor movements to states where you had very little labor movements, right to light movements. In fact, labor was weak, and that was one of the reasons why capital was seeking to flee organized labor and go to these different places in the South, these move their plants to the South, leaving behind thousands and thousands and thousands of workers. Thousands of workers. Youngstown, Ohio, we lost about 20,000 jobs overnight because of what Reverend Jackson talked about in this era. It was also the era of the conglomerates coming to power. Conglomerization of power. He talked about the merging, purging, and submerging of jobs on the world scene through globalization. Reverend Jackson, therefore, unlike other presidential candidates, he rolled up his sleeves. He would go to the plant gates, march with the workers. He would go to the farms and organize, and where you had farm foreclosures because farms are being shut down and foreclosed on because of these giant agribusinesses shutting down, you know, smaller farms and causing tremendous amount of suffering. But not only would he do that, he would go and actually live and stay with the families. I know, because I was there with him as we stayed in the homes of people, sat at their tables and ate with them. That was the genius of the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson being on the front lines. He rallied workers in the community and black folk under Marion Barry. I never will forget. He took Marion Barry, mayor of Washington, D.C., to meet with the Secretary of State of Agriculture, Jim Hightower of Texas, Rural Urban Coalition, talking about how do we not fight with each other but build in terms of economic policy. Brilliant, the genius of the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, unapologetically stood up for Native Americans, Asian Americans, Latinos, women. And also he stood up for Palestinians. You know what that means, to stand up with Palestinians or Arab Americans at that time? You weren't supposed to do that because they're supposed to be the enemy somehow. He stood with the Palestinians, stood with women, stood with the LGBTQ community. In fact, he actually was one of the keynote speakers for the first lesbian and gay march on Washington. I know because I was there with him. And Leslie Kagan, one of the great leaders of the LGBTQ movement back in the day, can testify to that reality. On the question of public policy, he talked about in an ingenious way, all the union pension funds that we don't control that could be used for investment in cities. He was talking about infrastructure way back then, years ago, 74, 19, I mean, 90, 90 the 88 and 88 and 84 campaigns. He was talking about infrastructure. And we're just now getting around to an infrastructure bill. Same day on-site registration. We're beginning to get around to that. He was talking about it in the 1984 and 80. Why are we restricted? And in these situations where you vote and then your vote is thrown out and all that kind of stuff. He said, no, same day on-site registration. Election holidays. And, of course, as you heard, he was a champion of voter registration going all across the country, trying to wake up those rocks just laying around, persuading black voters that we are the secret sauce. We are the root. We are the margin of victory if we would just, in fact, pick up our rocks and march on ballot boxes. He declared that the hands that pick cotton could pick presidents. And, of course, we saw that actually happened. And hence, when President Barack Hussein Obama was elected, you saw him in the park with tears in his eyes. Because he knew that the hands that picked cotton had contributed significantly by way of a rainbow coalition unspoken to the election of the first African-American president of these United States of America. I had the privilege of working with Reverend Jackson, being, you know, hanging with the family and all that, and what a wonderful family it is. And I would always joust with him all the time. I said, Reverend Jackson, you're an authentic genius. He would laugh. But then after a while, he'd say, yeah, I would say, yeah, you're authentic and a genius. And that he was and is. And so today we salute him with friends and folk who offer their reflections. And we want you to line up to 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877 to give your reflections. And so we're now going to go to our first interview with someone who is in the spirit of Reverend Jackson, has been influenced by him, supports him, and he supports the work in Selma. He goes to Selma every year. Every year we have Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson going to Selma. Even now that he has a degenerative disease and it's difficult for him to stand, he still goes and tries to march across the bridge. Well, he wasn't able to march the last time. He had to go across on a wheel in a wheelchair. But that's all right, because he was down with the proposition of going to Selma. So we're going to ask that we get plugged in to Faya Rose Teray, who is the founder of the Voting Rights Museum in Selma, Alabama. Do we have Faya Rose Teray ready for us?
Try it.
All right. Well, she's standing by. I just talked to her about an hour ago, so let's keep trying that.
No. That. Try it now. She's on.
Oh, okay. Faya Rose, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, all right. Well, anyway, I wanted to be sure you did, because I told him, I said, we can't have this show without Faya Rose Teray. Ain't happening.
Hello?
So you need to speak up. I'm not hearing you.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
That's very, very faint. Are you on a speakerphone?
Hello?
Now I hear you loud and clear. All right.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear now. Can you hear me?
I can barely hear y'all.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll be shouting
into
the phone.
Taking off the speakerphone?
Yeah, you shouldn't be on the speakerphone.
All right. Can you hear me? I can hear you loud and clear. Now, can you hear me? I can barely hear y'all.
Okay. Yeah. And by the way, if you listen to yourself in the background, you have a delay, so that'll be problematic in some ways. So let's come right to it and let's talk about it. Can you hear me now?
Hello.
Yeah, I'm hearing you. I'm hearing you. Yeah, but what you should do, Faya Rose, I can hear you in the background.
Well,
you have your
on,
yeah, you have the radio on, or you have
yeah,
your...
the radio has Hello? To be turned down because I hear the feedback on your end.
Hello.
Yeah, but you gotta Faya, you have to turn your radio off or down or the internet off because there's a delay system. So you got to just talk straight to me. Can you hear me now?
Okay, we're going to try to get her back.
All right. So in the interim, while we're doing that, let me just say a word about Faya Rose Teray. As I said before, the founder, she and her family, Senator Hank Sanders, her daughter, Malika and others, they have been very instrumental in keeping the bridge crossing Jubilee alive. I mean, literally with their own resources. I mean, just done such a magnificent job over the years. And, you know,
okay, let's try it again.
Can you hear me now, Faya Rose?
I can hear you now.
Okay, great. All right. So, let's move right into it. I introduced you. I talked about the founding of the Voting Rights Museum and all the incredible work you do in preserving the bridge crossing Jubilee. And one of the persons who always comes and always supports is Reverend Jesse Jackson. So I'm just going to sort of turn it over to you and have you just talk about even how you met Reverend Jackson, perhaps initially, but equally important, your assessment of his legacy, his work, and what he meant not only to Selma, but what he has meant really to Black people and people in general.
Oh, what an honor. Oh, thank you, Ron, for remembering and thinking about me, because Jesse Jackson is very special to me. And it's really interesting because we're probably maybe a year or two older than me, But my maternal instinct, I've always felt this need, and he didn't need my protection, but I always felt this need to protect him because I know he was constantly under attack, and I know that he was greatly unappreciated for the tremendous things that he has done. I first met Jesse when I was at Johnson C. Smith, believe it or not, back in the early 60s. He didn't really know me. He came to our campus because I think he was attending a local college in North Carolina. But it was when I first saw him, I was not struck by his good looks, even though he looked good. But it was something about his aura. There was something charismatic about him. But I did not get to know him till I moved to Selma in 71. And every year that I can remember that we crossed that bridge, that we remembered the sacrifice of the people like C.J. Adams and the Courageous Eight, Amelia Barnes, and all the people that really laid the foundation for the movement, those young people. And I was talking to one of those young people the other day and said it was Jesse Jackson who came to Selma that inspired her to join that movement, Betty Boynton. And when I first met Jesse, we were not having the bridge crossing every year. But it was in the early 90s, 91, that we decided that we needed a museum, that we needed to really document the history and to have a living memorial to people so they would never forget that prior to the passage of the Voting Rights Act, Black people could not vote in many parts of the South. Selma, in Lyons County, there was not a single Black registered voter. And I remember that Jesse came to Selma and we wanted to start the museum, and he was able to raise the first $8,000 for us to start that museum, and it's still standing. Even though we're greatly underfunded, we are still standing. But I not only remember Jesse for the work he did in Selma, but as a, when you, Ron, when you served as his chairman for the presidential fund, I remember being very excited about that and how we organized Alabama New South so that we could be force, because there were actually Black people who feared that he could never be the president, who did not give support and chose to support his white opponent. But we had the vision to know that Jesse not only had a chance to win, and winning was not just winning a presidential. Jesse had a higher purpose. Jesse knew that he could win. He could use that race to galvanize and to build a coalition of people of goodwill of all races. And that's when he founded the Rainbow Coalition and inspired us to found here in Alabama the New South Coalition. So there's so much I can say about Jesse, but I want to say something about Jesse the family man also. I remember he asked me to come to Chicago, and I did many years ago. And I was sitting in a room with him, and he got a call from his child. In the midst of a very hot conversation about organizing people and voting rights and human rights, what impressed me was that Jesse Jackson took the call of his child. He stopped the meeting, and he said, "Oh, this is one of my children, and I have to take this call." That, to me, said something about Jesse Jackson, the man, not just the organizer, not just the man that ran for president, but the man, the human being. And last year, we again were marching all the way from Selma to Montgomery because the right to vote is under fierce attack. As a matter of fact, this fragile democracy that we have is under attack. And therefore, we had organizations from all over the country. All the major organizations came, NAACP, Dr. Barber's organization, but Jesse was right there. And I saw him marching on Highway 80. In spite of his physical challenges, he insisted on getting out of that vehicle and marching with us. And I was so inspired to see this giant, as you say, this genius of a man, this man of great compassion and vision, but still determined. Like you said, he said, I will march, I will fight for justice until there's no breath in me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to share with you, I'm not calling the poem, but there are some words I wrote to try to capture Jesse Jackson, and I would like to share those words with you, if I may.
You certainly may.
I call it the Son of Light, the Son of Light. And I just wrote it, so I might stumble on a few words, so please bear with me. Son of Light, burst from the glorious darkness of the womb of an African queen, Son of Light. Light so brilliant and bright, it blinds the naysayers of truth and reveals the beauty of darkness. Son of Light, following the path of torchbearers and justice seekers who came before you. No godly weapon is excluded from your arsenal. No space or time off limits. From the streets of Memphis and Selma to Wall Street and Silicon Valley, across waters, freeing the imprisoned and the unredeemed. In the spirit of Gideon, you slay giants of injustice in every sphere. Education, economics, environment, in courtrooms and corporate rooms, running to the apex of political power, a mission deemed impossible, creating the path for mayors, governors, and even a president, with rocks just laying around. Jesse Lewis Jackson, building coalitions, red, yellow, black, and white, declaring our time has come. Building communities, building hope, fighting for voting rights, civil rights, human rights, with rocks just laying around. Slaying giants of voter suppression, injustice, democracy deniers, destroyers of dreams and possibilities. Challenging children just to keep hope alive, with rocks just laying around. Your genius, your resiliency, your courage and vision was the light that led your way, that led your way, taking rocks and molding boulders. Son of Light. Son of Light. The giants keep coming, but you never back down. Even when the beneficiaries of your light demonize and try to destroy you, but you never, my brother, you never back down. You never dim your light. Even when your body was challenged, your spirit soared. You keep marching, you keep fighting, you keep praying, you keep believing that we will reach that promised land, the promised land that your brother, Dr. Martin Luther King, warned us and prepared us as you stood beside him moments before his death. But you are never alone. God is the sustainer of your light, and you refuse to yield to the darkness of greed and selfish ambition. But you are never alone. Your Gideon army, Jackie, your partner in marriage and struggle, are always with you. And the forces of evil can never separate you from your light, your purpose, your mission, and your vision. Son of Light, Jesse Jackson, you are our North Star, our bridge over troubled waters, our wheel in the middle of the wheel, making waves and waves out of no way. Son of Light, how do we thank you? How do you thank the stars for starlight? How do you thank the moon for moonlight, or the sun for sunlight? Jesse Lewis Jackson, Son of Light, we show our gratitude, our immense gratitude, sharing your story, your struggles, and your victories, sharing them with our children so they will see your good works. And your light will never be extinguished. But each generation will shine brighter and even brighter, so bright that the darkness of wretched injustice and hate will never rise again. Son of light, even the stars envy your light and bear witness to the power of one man to bring light to the world with rocks just laying around. Son of light.
Oh, that was so powerful, and what a creative person you are, Fire Rose Terway. We thank you so much for that powerful testimony. I know Reverend Jackson is going to appreciate it. And again, we appreciate so much your work. Tell people how they can be in touch with the Bridge Crossing Jubilee. Is there a website or a phone number?
Yes, yes. And as you said, he's such a supporter of the Jubilee. And Jubilee this year is right around the corner, March, the first full weekend in March, 4th and 5th and 6th of March. And you can join this historical sojourn. And you used to come all the time, my brother. I know you have a lot of challenges, but I hope you can come again.
Yeah, well, I came last year again, but, you know, I had to take a little bit of a break. But I'm going to be promoting it. So people can go to the website. If they just Google Bridge Crossing Jubilee, and they'll be able to connect in. So thank you so much for you and your family and all that you contributed. And I know Reverend Jackson is going to really enjoy that superb, inspiring piece that you just wrote. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I'm going to continue to listen. I found it on my radio.
All right. That's good. All right. Well, next up, we are going to, let's hear. In fact, Fire Rose Terway spoke about it. Reverend Jesse Jackson used to go to schools all the time. All the time. He understood the psychodynamics of our people. And that way, he was really akin to Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey understood we had bruised egos. He knew and understood that we had been miseducated. He understood that we were downtrodden. But he always wanted to pick us up. And he would go to high schools over and over again. And he would always be talking about, in fact, somebody just wrote a play about it, I think, called I Am Somebody. So let's hear, before we get to Dr. Julianne Malvo, who will be coming up next, let's hear an excerpt from Reverend Jesse Jackson's speaking on I Am Somebody.
I may be poor, but I am somebody. I may be on welfare, but I am somebody. I may be in jail, but I am somebody. I may be uneducated, somebody. I am black, beautiful, proud. I must be respected. I must be protected.
Well, Reverend Jesse Jackson, boy, he would do, if he ever came to a city, that was a part of his routine. If he's coming to a city to speak on anything, he'd always request, is there a high school? Is there a school I can go to? For years and years and years and years, he would go to a school and he would go and preach that gospel of I Am Somebody to inspire young people to get up and get moving and to have a sense of purpose and direction. So we now want to touch base with someone who is very connected.
Not yet.
We're not ready. Okay, we're reaching out to Dr. Julianne Malvo next. She is very connected with Reverend Jackson. I first met her through the Jackson campaign. Actually, Dr. Julianne Malvo and I work very closely together. And she's works with the Rainbow Push on educational issues and does a magnificent job and is hanging in there and continues to work to build out Reverend Jackson's legacy in that way. She is also a charter member of the National African American Reparations Commission. We now have Dr. Julianne Malvo with us. She is the inaugural dean of the college of the college, the first college of ethnic studies, the University of Los Angeles, California, Los Angeles. Dr. J, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me. I'm just moved by Rose Saunders and what she just read, and the way the two of y'all played off the theme of rocks laying around. Thank you for what you're doing. I don't think we can say enough about Reverend Jackson, but thank you for doing the show on his genius, which can never be understated.
Are you on a speakerphone? Because your voice is a little low as well.
I am on a speakerphone. Okay, hold on. Let me see what else I can do. Can you hear me now?
Oh, we can hear you much better. So talk to us.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, we can hear you very clearly now. So in your time, just talk to us about your sense of Reverend's genius, his work from your perspective. You know, you got about 4 or 5 minutes to lay it out. So what is your sense of Reverend's legacy in that regard?
Oh, just such a powerful legacy, especially around education. I mean, he always believed in, pushed, promoted education. The founding of Push Excel, of course, before I became president, it was founded in the 70s. Again, because he wanted to raise money, you know, he had a phenomenal ability to raise money, but he didn't just want to raise it for politics. He wanted to make sure that young people had opportunities, scholarships, summer opportunities with Push, with Rainbow. I met Reverend first, gosh, in the 1970s. I was Essence Magazine's first college editor. And the sister who was their PR person, Lenice Taylor, who's no longer with us, brought me to one of those Push Expo things. You remember the big things he used to do at the convention center with Lottie Dottie and everybody there? You know, the entertainers.
I talked about that. A lot of people forget there was Black Expos. He'd have them. They were phenomenal.
Everybody was there. I mean, the entertainers, but the political figures, the entrepreneurs, all of that. That was the basis of what he continued to do with Push and with others. And I met him with Lynn, and I was, you know, teenager at the time, had met him once before, but had never been in such close proximity as to sit down and have lunch with him. And there were a group of us, about 10 of us, going to this place called the Soul Queen of the Sea. And they kept changing the food, I mean, because we kept eating it up. You know, we just, and he just dropping knowledge. But what impressed me about him then the most is that he reached out to the people at the table who are not well known. You know, I was a kid. I was a college sophomore or something. He reached out to all of us, wanted all of us to participate in the conversation. And that's Reverend Jackson. He always believes that everybody got something to say.
And you were also involved in the 84 and 88 campaigns and all of that. We're in a political season now. I just played, you go back and you listen to that Rocks Just Laying Around. What a brilliant, the genius of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. And what are your thoughts of his contribution, frankly, to the whole notion of the kind of political campaigning and coalition building that in some ways you might argue is urgently and desperately needed now?
Oh, you're absolutely right about it being needed now. You know, I'm here in L.A. where the issue of Black-Brown conflict is at the top of everybody's agenda. And I think about Reverend pulling us all together back in 1984 and ensuring that we all heard from each other. In 84, you know, I ran as a Jackson delegate, also ran for political office, got my butt beat, but I cannot help reflect on the number of Black politicians who were empowered by that campaign. I mean, often people talk about other Black folks who run for public office, but Reverend was a pioneer in not just running himself, but ensuring that other people, think of Cleo Fields, think of Donna Brazile, Mignon Moore. We could call the roll. I don't know how many state elected officials emerged from that 84 campaign, but there were many of them because they were workers, they were boots on the ground, and they went on to build their own campaigns and political legacies. All of that is a result of Reverend Jackson not only pioneering campaign, but also his ability to mentor younger politicians and to teach them some things. And of course, there was a thing, you read one of the clips about qualified. I mean, that was the most ridiculous thing, white folks say Black people couldn't be qualified. And he took that on frontally and said, what are the qualifications? I mean, there's so many lines you could think of. I remember the 84 campaign when he said he'd rather have Roosevelt in a wheelchair than Reagan on a horse. Mm-hmm. You know, yes. There were so many one-liners like that. And then, Ron, the 88, of course, we worked closely in the 88, and I was one of the Jackson surrogates, and it used to crack me up when Reverend would commit to speak, but he couldn't be in three places at one time. And two or three times he put me on the plane and said, well, you're going to go speak for me. And you cannot believe, but I'm sure you can, the disappointment on people's faces when, instead of Reverend Jackson getting off the plane, Julian Balbo got off the plane.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, Dr. J, we appreciate so much. You're still
that
working.
That was quite interesting.
You're still working very closely.
Am I still with you?
Yeah, I'm saying you're still working closely with
Hello, am I still with you?
Yeah, you're still with me, yeah, but I'm getting ready to transition, but I'm saying you're still working very closely.
Hello, am I still with you?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I'm hearing you, but you're not apparently hearing me. I don't know what happened in terms of the connection. But anyway, that was Dr. Julianne Malvo. She's with the Push XL, still working very closely with Reverend Jackson.
I think I was only supposed to have 5 minutes, but the person before me had a long time. I only had
Okay. The point is now is that we weren't hearing each other.
Music.
So and
but it was okay because I did tell them I needed to be off in time to talk to Fozzie. So
right. Okay. Well, anyway, really I'm just moving the show right along and thanking you for your contribution to the show. Yeah, the person before you, because of Selma and all the Selma Mees and the bridge crossing Jubilee, had a few more minutes. That was by design, that everybody else has the same amount of time. So, you know, we appreciate you for what you do.
So
your
make
contribution.
Customers write the letter, then don't put your own damn language in there.
I mean, all right, so we want to move now to our next guest. While we disconnect with Dr. Malvo, because Dr. Malvo is in the background taking care of some business. let's reach out to, before we do our Keep Hope Alive speech, let's reach out to Barbara Arnwine, if you would. Barbara Arnwine is on the road working on voter registration right now, trying to get. She is very much into the rocks just laying around, and she's trying to wake them up. And
all right, we'll do.
She is phenomenal, the work that she's doing. Again, that was Dr. Julianne Malvo, and again, she's doing some dean work in the background and whatnot. She's an administrator, former president emeritus of a college in North Carolina, who I'm blanking on at the moment, but we're going to get. Barbara Arnwine on the line, and then after that we're going to hear Reverend Jackson's Keep Hope Alive and move right down the line with this tribute to Reverend Jesse Jackson today. We call it the genius of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, and you're hearing testimonies of that with people who have worked very closely with him, and these are people that I've also worked very closely with as well, and I know how much they love Reverend Jackson.
Okay.
And how much they work with him. So, Barbara Arnwine, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, Barbara Arnwine, I was telling people we played Reverend Jackson's Rocks Just Laying Around to kick off the show, talking about voting rights and how we need to pick up those rocks and slay the Goliaths of MAGAism and white nationalism and everything that's afflicting us. And I can think of no one who is more dedicated to that cause. You're out there pounding the pavement now, and that is you, Barbara Arnwine. So talk to us about your sense of the work that you've done with Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, how you see his legacy and the relevance of his life and legacy now.
Well, Reverend Jesse Jackson is just a genius.
Did we lose her? And we seem to.
All right, we'll try again.
All righty.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute.
You've got people on the move, and that makes it difficult somehow because we know that Barbara Arnold.
Okay, she's on.
I know she's on, but I know she's rolling registering voters, so her signal may be going up and down. So, Barbara, you back?
Yes. I lost you from the music. Okay, I'm back. And
all right.
I just wanted to say that the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson Sr. has been an amazing leader and genius in his advocacy. He's been so strategic. I just find it amazing that I meet so many people and who are in, you know, positions of leadership and powerful advocacy. And it turns out most of them tell me that they were trained by Reverend Jesse Jackson, or they worked with him, or he mentored them. It's just amazing his influence, his wide-ranging influence on so many people and across so many states, so many communities, and not to mention his influence internationally. He is right. An incredible icon. And what I liked about him is that there is no work when it comes to doing the work that he's not willing to do to make sure that our rights are protected. So I am rolling down the street right now, rolling down these highways on our, you know, as part of this Arc of Voter Justice Tour. And he's part of that. He's right. Part of the 2022 GOTV Arc of Voter Justice Tour. And I just got to give him all the credit for his inspiration, his support, his amazing genius, his, you know, ability to line up the right people to do the best work. I have nothing but tremendous respect, admiration, and it has been for him, and it's been an honor. It is such an honor to work with him all the time, because he never stops. He calls me in the middle of the night, calls me from his hospital bed, calls me whenever there's something that needs to be done, because he is determined to get it done. Amazing man.
That's one of the things that I was talking to someone the other day, and I can't recall who it was now, and they reflect on the fact that you think that Reverend Jackson never sleeps, because he might give you a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, Lawrence 6 o'clock in the morning. I mean, yes, the energy, the level of energy is unbelievable.
Absolutely. And his energy level, you know, is just amazing. Some people have said that it's almost superhuman, his his ability, his stamina, and all the things that he's able to do, his multifaceted thinking, all of the great, you know, work that he does. And what I've also liked about him is he's had no problems with having, you know, women in leadership, no problems with, you know, working across, you know, communities. He's not a person who looks down on anybody. He's always elevating everybody up. He is such an amazing figure, and he's somebody who I think this world owes tremendous tribute to, because he continues to make our lives and that of our nation better. And right. I just cannot wait for his next inspiration.
And talk to us as we close about what you're doing. You're rolling, and I appreciate you taking time out, because you don't take too much time out, and you took out time out for Reverend Jackson because you respect them so much, but you are on the kind of mission that Reverend Jesse Jackson appreciates. So talk about the ARC tour that you're on, and what it's about and how it's going.
Well, we are on the ARC of Voter Justice GOTV tour. It started October the 8th. So we are on the 10th day of the tour. We're in our 17th city, on our way to the 18th city right now, in Wilmington, North Carolina. And we are traveling from Minneapolis through Jacksonville, 14 whole days on the road, traveling through 23 to 26 different cities. And what we're doing is we're going to the communities with the lowest voter turnout. And yes, we are canvassing, we're voter-cating, we're in voter education, voter outreach, to make sure that those voters know, those persons in those communities know that they have the right to vote, that they are, that their votes are desired, that we want them to vote. We're not telling them who to vote for, but we're telling them to vote. Exercise that citizenship. Don't throw away your power. If you don't like the way things are, then vote to make it right. If you don't like people who are in office, vote them out. If you want better people in office, vote them in. Run for office yourself. I mean, we're taking that message hard and strong, all over the country. And I'm going to tell you, folks have been responding. It's amazing. You go into some of these neighborhoods, Ron, and there's not one sign from one candidate, because they've ridden these neighborhoods off. and rid these people off. But one thing about black people, nobody can stop us. Nobody can write us off. So I'm glad that we're out here doing this tour. And as I mentioned, Reverend Jackson has been instrumental in helping plan this tour. He talked to me from his hospital bed, and he's been working with us ever since on making this tour successful.
Right. Well, like I said before, you are relentless. You do the job. You are our voter protection champion. You have sounded the alarm. You've fought hard on this mission. I so respect you and work with you on this and point people in your direction. So thank you so much for joining us today for this tribute to the genius of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Take good care.
All right, that was Barbara Arnwine, and she's out there rolling and actually living and continuing to work on that legacy. Well, we want to continue to move forward, but let's hear again the words of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, because one of the things that I tell people that they don't understand is that he has a way of taking complex concepts and making them very simple. So when he says keep hope alive, people just think, what he understands is that a hopeless people are a helpless people. When people have hope, they struggle. When people have hope, they fight. When people have hope, they organize, they mobilize. And so his effort is always to stimulate, encourage. And he said, keep hope alive, keep hope alive. He wants us to be engaged. And what an incredible, even today, I was with him when I was with him on October 8th. Again, his voice is a little weaker now and all that. He's saying, keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. So let's now, before we hear next from Rick Adams, let's hear from Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, an excerpt of Keep Hope Alive.
Young America, hold your head high now. We can win. You must never stop dreaming. Face reality, yes, but don't stop with the way things are. Dream of things as they ought to be. Dream. Face pain. But love, hope, faith, and dreams will help you rise above the pain. Use hope and imagination as weapons of survival and progress. But you keep on dreaming, young America. Dream of peace. Peace is rational and reasonable. War is irrational in this age and unwinnable. Dream of teachers who teach for life and not for living. Dream of doctors who are concerned more about public health than private wealth. Dream of lawyers more concerned about justice than a judgeship. Dream of preachers who are concerned more about prophecy than profiteering. Dream on the high road of sound values. You must never surrender to inequality. Women cannot compromise ERA or comparable work. Women are making 60 cents on the dollar for what a man makes. Women cannot buy meat cheaper. Women cannot buy bread cheaper. Women cannot buy milk cheaper. Women deserve to get paid for the work that you do. It's right and it's fair. I'm often asked, Jesse, why do you take on these tough issues? They're not very political. We can't win that way. If an issue is morally right, it will eventually be political. It may be political and never be right. Fannie Lou Hamer didn't have the most votes in Atlantic City. Well, the principals have outlasted every delegate who voted to lock her out. Rosa Parks did not have the most votes, but she was morally right. Dr. King didn't have the most votes about the Vietnam War, but he was morally right. If we're principled first, our politics will fall into place. When you see Jesse Jackson, when my name goes in nomination, your name goes in nomination. I was born in the slum, but the slum was not born in me. And it wasn't born in you, and you can make it. Wherever you are tonight, you can make it. Hold your head high. Stick your chest out. You can make it. It gets dark sometimes, but the morning comes. Don't you surrender. Suffering breeds character. Character breeds faith. In the end, faith will not disappoint. You must not surrender. You may or may not get there, but just know that you are qualified and you hold on and hold out. We must never surrender. America will get better and better. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. On tomorrow night and beyond. Keep hope alive. I love you very much.
Ask the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. Keep hope alive. And you can see what I'm talking about in terms of, if you're a political scientist or whatever, you understand that social movements are not born in despair. They succeed when people have hope. People have hope, they'll stand in front of tanks. When people have hopes, they'll march across an Edmund Pettus Bridge and they'll be trampled by horses and they'll get up and they'll go again. That's what Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson is talking about. We need that now. We need that spirit now. We need his voice now. I don't quite know where some of those voices are. There are a whole lot of people out here who are running and pontificating and prancing and ripping and rhyming and so forth. But that's why I say we must never forget, really, this legacy. He said, I am not a perfect servant. I'm a public servant. He admits, you know, flaws and failings and controversies and so forth. The essence of this man, however, is the genius, the authenticity, the vision. And where there is no vision, the people perish. But he offered that vision and backed it up day in and day out, fighting relentlessly, energetically, tirelessly. And even now, as he is suffering from a degenerative disease, he said, I would rather burn out than rust down. I ain't sitting around. I'm getting up. I'm going to keep throwing blows. I'm going to keep throwing blows. Let's now hear from the chairman of the Board of Institute of the Blackwell 21st Century. But for this conversation, the person who was associated with the Jackson campaign.
Nope, still trying to.
You haven't gotten him yet?
It's not answering.
Okay. Well, I don't know what's happening with. Well, all right. Well, we'll give him a few minutes. That is the right number. I'm looking at it. So he should be there. But we'll wait a couple of minutes, and if not, we actually can go on to our next person. Hope they're standing by. Everybody's busy. People are out there moving around, doing work. Even if we saw, Barbara Ehrenreich, she's on the move. But she took time out to say that she wanted to be a part of this program today, and that's why we plugged her in to the program. So we hope that Rick Adams is, I know, he was passing around the promo, sending it around the country because we got people from around the country listening. And by the way, we want you. You may have been inspired by Jesse Jackson. You may have worked with Jesse Jackson.
Okay.
We want you to have your say. So I think we have Chairman Rick now on the line. Chairman Rick, you there?
Yes, sir. Here and with a lot of pride to be asked to participate. Number one, you are like the person we're talking about today in terms of never failing to ask somebody to take up a major task. And it's just empowering that you have faith. For example, you put me behind Thea Rose Touré, Julia Melvo, and Barbara Ehrenreich. Gee, thanks. But you also sometimes got me behind Reverend Jackson himself. And I just want to say that I am so honored. I was able to experience Martin Luther King in time, I'll put it that way. But with the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, I've been able to experience him in reality, in place. In fact, being in the same place and then being honored to be given tasks. I was with Reverend before the rainbow. And I say that because in 71, I was so proud when I got that card from Operation Push. When I understood what was going on and him moving from breadbasket and that he assembled black folk first to say we need our own organization and we need to continue the legacy of Dr. King. And when I think about Jesse, one of the things that he embodied probably one of the greatest things is the moral authority that Dr. King so famously utilized to move our movement forward. Liberation theology, if you will, that Christian theology is what motivated a lot of Black as well as other people to even hear what Reverend Jackson had to say. And when you hear the concepts and principles that he espoused, what you realize, if you come from an academic background, you understand that he's talking theology, he's talking sociology, psychology, political science. If you understand, he has all those disciplines. So if you have that background, you have something to say that you got from Jesse. Another great gift is being able to speak to the people. So it might be undergirded with some of the fanciest language in the world, but you got to learn how to break it down. And he did that so effectively. Some of the major years in my life are connected to him. 71, as I said, the early 80s, 1983, marching to get Dr. King's birthday national holiday. Of course, his run in 1984, and that's the first time I ran for political office. And I was the only candidate, Black or white, who put on their literature in that year, vote for me for state representative, but don't forget to vote for Jesse Jackson for president.
Right, right.
And so I've been following on a course that you actually and he have set, that you have provided the role model, the game plan, the marching orders for all of us to follow. And there's not been a greater man. His vision has moved so many of us. Another date probably would be, when was that? 86, I think, when we had the National Rainbow Coalition in Raleigh, North Carolina. We had that founding convention. There were just so many powerful moments.
That was 88. But Rick, you also, because Reverend Jackson, in 1988, if I recall correctly, he came. I know it's true because I recommended that he come to Pittsburgh for a pre-announcement, because he was still, you know, fall. They were still deciding, you know, whether he was going to run and da da da. That was probably in 87. I said, Reverend Jackson, you need to go to Pittsburgh on Labor Day. And somebody said, well, no, if he does that, he'll be stepping on his mat. I said, no. You announce that you're going to announce. And of course, you would have been instrumental in helping to, in fact, on more than one occasion, I know you helped to organize Reverend Jackson's visit to Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh is a crucial part, not only in Pennsylvania, but was a crucial part of the Rainbow Coalition.
Could not have been exposed to some of the things that I was able to be exposed. You mentioned the pre-Labor Day announcement. We got a hillside overlooking the city with the city, the backdrop, and the theatrical workers built us a stage, and we got there and we made that announcement, and then we marched in the Labor Day parade, and it was tremendous. On a later visit, we got a riverboat and came up the Mon Valley with him on the riverboat. I couldn't even be there. I was in the headquarters working for the rally we had in the convention center. But some magic moments and a strong rainbow. In fact, people don't know this if they weren't around. They may not know it if they were around. Allegheny County, which Pittsburgh is in, is the only major county in the entire United States that had bumper stickers that said, "Don't blame me." And what they were talking about was, we didn't vote for Reagan. We were the only major county that didn't get swept by Reagan.
Right.
So we have a tremendous fighting tradition, and Jesse, with his connection to labor and the common man and woman, he just embodied that. And people of all backgrounds in life just took to it naturally.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Really wanted you to be a part, because I know you're one of those troopers on the ground, but one of those leaders that are still in the battle, influenced by Reverend Jackson, carrying out that vision and that work.
Love Reverend and the whole Jackson family, man. And, forever in the battle.
All right. Well, thank you much. Really appreciate you taking time out to be a part of discussion this afternoon. And we're going to move right along. We're falling a little bit behind time, but that's all right. We do want to create a little space, as much space as possible for people to join in the conversation. I'm giving out the number now, 212-209-2877. We want to call on Baba Greg Arkeley next. But while we're waiting to connect him, 212-209-2877, the audience can line up because we have two more presenters on The Genius of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, this special radio tribute. And then we're going to take as many phone calls as we can from anywhere and wherever, all over the country. Again, I know I was advised by Donna Brazil that she may call in, and we'll see. And by the way, she'll be calling in on the guest line, and so we'll listen to her if she calls through. And if not, you know, we know that there are many within our audience who have had various experiences with Reverend Jackson, and we're going to record this. This is being recorded, and we are going to present him with a copy, and I'm sure he will be exhilarated that we thought of him. And he's ready to go. So are we ready to go with Greg Akili?
Yes, sir.
All right, Baba Greg Akili, you came to the South, helped rescue me. I was deputy campaign manager. Super Tuesday was one of the great triumphs of the 1988 campaign. And, brother, you came to the South and helped organize it, the Jackson Accent, Rainbow Express, and all that good stuff. We just want you to speak to us about your perceptions and feelings and reflections on the genius of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. You have the floor, sir.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ron. And thank you, first of all, for doing this. I think it is needed and appropriate, and it's about time. And I'm working with the Fannie Lou Hamer Institute here in Los Angeles. And one of the things we are doing is picking up those rocks, as has been alluded to throughout the program. I worked in Reverend Jackson's campaign, both in 84 in San Diego, and then came out to work with you in 1988. And one of the things that I've always appreciated about Reverend Jackson, and I think it's been said many times by many of the people who have been on, is, first of all, his capacity to explain, to describe and define in ways that all of us could understand and accept. I thought he had a genius for doing that.
That's right.
As you said, to make sure that the goats could get grass. And so he did that in a way. And I think because of that, it inspired people. I certainly know it inspired me. And I saw firsthand how he could move a crowd, whether it was 5 people or 5,000 people. And you made reference to those workers in Ohio that he stayed with. I was with him that night when he met with some workers, and he stayed at their house. And we were all tired. We were all, and I'm thinking, man, I don't think I can go on. But he not only, you know, talked to them and moved them, he had the energy to do it and keep going. And that's something I've always respected and admired. And the other thing that has been talked about, many of the people who have been on, is Reverend Jackson, he paved the path. He built the steps. He opened the doors for Obama and for Harris and for Booker and for a number of Black national leaders, local leaders around the country. One of the things that we don't talk about enough is that during that 88 campaign, over 3 million people were registered to vote. And to this day, those people who were registered to vote are still having an impact. Now, we got to make sure that we connect with them. We got to make sure that we work with them. But he had an impact. And certainly there would be no Barack Obama if there had not been a Jesse Jackson. There would certainly be no Vice President Kamala Harris if there had not been a Jesse Jackson. And so, like I said, he paved the ways. He built the steps and he opened the doors so that they could be there. Reverend Jackson also shifted the paradigm. You know, people used to say to me, well, did you ever think you would see a Black president? Yes, I knew that because I saw what Reverend Jackson did. And it's so ironic that 20 years after 1988, I'm the South LA field coordinator for Obama. And so I had seen, because Jesse had opened the door, I knew that we could get a Black president. His capacity, his brilliance, and his genius, and his willingness to work hard. That's the other thing. I mean, you can be brilliant.
Yeah, no question about that.
You can explain things, but unless you're willing to put in the work, it may not always matter. And I think Rick also made reference to it, his moral clarity. This whole point about you can be political, but you don't have to, you might not be right. And he always talked about being right and being political. And so, once again, the time that he helped shape, develop, and advance the concepts for black liberation and for social justice is still with us today. And I think you can see that in the tour that Barbara Ehrenreich is doing. You can see that in this program, how all of us are making the same points about Jesse's brilliance, Jesse's capacity, and Jesse's hard work. And so, first, I want to thank you for doing this, and I want to thank Reverend Jackson for inspiring me, for you know, for his commitment, for his brilliance, and for his love of black people. And you, I heard that when he went into the high schools, and how he moves the young people. And I think we have people doing that today. They may do it differently. Right. And most people don't have that kind of capacity for oratory that he has. So, I don't expect, that, but I do expect, and I see a lot of us picking up, carrying on, and trying to advance the development and the tradition that he is, and the work that he has laid down. And so I'm proud to be on this program. I'm proud to be able to pay my respects, both to you for having the insight and the genius to say, you know, we can do this. And I remember that Action Jackson campaign, the route that we took.
That's right.
And how successful it was. And the fact that we won Super Tuesday, and I know that they had created Super Tuesday so that what happened with us would not ever happen again. But we proved them wrong, and Jesse That's proved right. them wrong, because he was a powerful orator, he was a hard worker, and he was authentic.
Right. All right. Well, Baba Akili, we appreciate you so much. The Fannie Lou Hamer Institute, working with Black Lives Matter, and we are honored to have you as a board member with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, one of the greatest organizers that I know, and we look forward to your continued work, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Well, we're going to go to our final speaker. He's a Baba, too. Everybody's getting, we've been out here a while doing this work, and I asked him to make some summary remarks because of his incredible legacy of work. But he has a way of contextualizing the legacy of great leaders like the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. So we're going to be reaching out to Dr. Ntongolizi Sanyika to close us out. Then take your phone calls at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877, the special edition of Vantage Point today, the genius of the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. We have been talking about him, his legacy, his contribution, the way in which he has done things and continues to do things, really to remember, really, and not to forget, and to continue the praxis, if you will, of his work. Do we have Dr. Sanyika ready to go?
Hold on.
All right, we're going to get Dr. Sanyika on, and then we're going to be getting you on. And Reggie, we appreciate you so much. This has been you had to juggle a lot of stuff today, but that's what we do on WBAI, and that's why you're so good, and why we appreciate you hanging in there for 20 years of dedicated service with WBAI, helping us to get across. And again, I'm going to make a $200 contribution later today, and we hope others will just do it, join in and say, hey, I enjoyed that program, that tribute to Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, and I'm going to contribute. Match Dr. D's.
Okay, let's try it.
$50, $100, whatever you can contribute to go. Dr. MT, are you there? Dr. MT? Dr. Sanyika?
Okie dokie, look like we got to try again.
Okay, all right. Well, sometimes he gets challenged with the technology, but I know he's been standing by. He listens. There are people who listen to the show all around the country, and he's one of them, because he called me the other day to say, well, I think you should have maybe done this and should have did a little of that. He's my dear beloved friend. Brilliant.
Okay,
brilliant.
Let's try it again.
All right, Dr. Sanyika, you're there.
Yes, sir, I'm here.
All right, well, I know you were probably listening in. I was just telling him, I say, I know you listen all the time, because we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago. You were calling me saying, giving me some suggestions and recommendations. We appreciate you being a steady listener to Vantage Point. So I really, I'm letting you be the closer today, my brother, in terms of what you've heard and the work that you've done with Reverend over the years. I talked about Roy Jones. A lot of people, he said, Roy Jones one time said, you must have forgot. Well, we don't want people to forget the genius of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. So you have the final word before we open up to our audience. So I'm just going to turn it over to you, my brother, to give your reflections.
Well, thank you very much, Ron, and to all of the participants and all of those out there who are listening. It's a privilege for me to have been asked to make a comment here. I'm a longtime associate of Reverend Jackson, as we also know him, the country preacher. We first connected in 1967 and 1968, not long after the Black Power conferences, in which he was one of my invited speakers at the first gathering of the National Gathering of Black Unitarian Universalists. And then we reconnected at the Congress of African People, where he started hearing the Nation Time slogan, you know, for the very first time. Throughout that period of time, we developed a particular kind of relationship from the vantage point of the church experience and the need to have churches more involved and engaged in Black liberation, which was not something that required very much convincing to persuade Brother Jackson to do that. I bring a perspective of a veteran of the civil rights movement of the South, as well as the Black Power movement of the North, both of which were aspects of Brother Jackson's career. And the contribution that he made to both of those processes, I think, can never be underestimated. So I want to share a couple of things that I see that I think are part of his legacy. A lot has already been said about his accomplishments and his contributions. So I want to pick up some of that, but I also want to add a couple of other things to it. The first of those is I see that Jesse Jackson inherited the Martin Luther King tradition of nonviolent protest and advocacy with an emphasis on the civil rights, equality, justice, and democracy movements, and that Jesse added to it politics and public policy. In addition to the advocacy, in addition to the civil rights, in addition to the emphasis on democracy, he added the unique dimension of politics and public policy in a way that we had not seen from movement activism in the past. The second thing that I see in his legacy is that he offered a principal innovation of the historical efforts to synthesize aspects of Martin's civil rights strategy with Malcolm's Black Power self-determination, human rights, and global rights strategy. In other words, he integrated the two traditions of our historical movement around autonomy and independence on the one side and civil rights and democratic participation on the other side. The tendency that we saw in Malcolm and the tendency that we saw in Martin, that they did not live to synthesize and integrate, Jesse on the dimensions of both of those traditions and inherited that possibility. As we see when we read the book by Coleman, Martin, and Malcolm, if you read it, you see all through it Jesse's actual implementation of that integration and synthesis of those traditions. And I think you heard Ron Daniels mention that earlier as a major piece of the contribution that we think that he had made. In addition to that, he took the very best of Martin's criticism of the fact that we were excluded from participation with Malcolm's observation that we were held relatively powerless in the spaces and places that we occupied, all of which the system forced upon us. That is, to me, what Jesse's example was saying, that the system forced us to be relatively powerless, as was discovered by Dr. King when he went up into Chicago. And the system forced upon us the exclusion from participation in a democratic society. It was to his genius that he saw both of those problems and it integrated the practice that followed from them. A third dimension of, I think, part of that legacy is that this was a unique and highly effective participation as a, what I call, a citizen diplomat. He was unique as a citizen diplomat. He was indeed an international hostage negotiator. You must remember that about him. Reverend Jackson alone instigated the freedom of at least 46 American citizens from countries such as Syria, Cuba, Iraq, North Korea, Yugoslavia, and that he had a keen interest in foreign affairs and international affairs. And remember, he was one of the supporters of the movement in South Africa. As a matter of fact, I heard him say once that if he could have been an ambassador, he would have preferred being an ambassador to South Africa. But he may have had to differ with presidents sometime a little bit too much, and thus he might not have made the best of ambassadors. But I differed with him on that. I think he would have been an excellent one. But we haven't had very many people in our history who have been good citizen diplomats, who have been certainly international hostage negotiators the way that he did, who brought home 46 American citizens when presidents of the United States were not able to do that. That is an extraordinary and a unique contribution that is to his credit, and we need to recognize that a bit more than we do. A fourth thing that I saw his legacy transmitting to us is that he was the architect of a new Black form of worship, a combination of the sacred as well as the secular. You've heard him talk about the rallies on Saturdays. So, well, I see that as a form of worship, a form of worship in which the sacred and the secular were not perceived as opposites or the antithesis of each other, but rather the unity of each other. Now, in these rallies, it was no accident that what he tried to do was to emphasize Black love. Right. There's no accident that he tried to say to our people we should love and respect one another, and that we should respect ourselves. And it was a constant reminder that was always saying to us, one, we are a nation within a nation because it is nation time. Two, he kept saying to us, but I am somebody, you are somebody. And three, you must keep hope alive. Those weren't just sloganeering for the fun of sloganeering. Those were deep emotional intellectual concepts that were attempting to transform the lives of our young people as well as our adult populations. It was indeed something we had not seen before, such a unique combination of the secular part of the Black experience with this, the sacred part of the Black experience, without them being in conflict and in tension. And that tradition is kept alive by many different churches today, many different nonprofits today, many different cultural organizations. We see the continuity of the affirmation of our isness, our who-ness, and our what-ness. That is what Jesse always reminded us of, and that's what these slogans, it's nation time, and keep hope alive, and I am somebody, reaffirm for us the beauty of our Blackness, our personhood, and our humanity. So run, Jesse, run, we thank you for that. The fifth dimension that I see is that he contributed to the continuity of the Black Convention Movement. Now, in 1970, when he came to the Congress of African People, he was indeed an outstanding person, a national figure still emerging, just as there were other national figures at that conference emerging. I happen to have chaired that conference, but that is where he heard it's nation time more than anything else, because Vilaka was saying it. But that is where he also heard about independent progressive Black politics in a way that had not been in the national forum previously, and all the national leadership was at that Congress of African People, but it was at that Congress of African People, and Ron Daniels, you were there, you remember, we called for the formation of the National Black Political Convention in Gary in 1972, and Jesse picked up that mantle, came right straight into Gary, and declared that it was nation time, but in addition, he also declared the water done broke, ready or not, America, here we come. If you recall, you know, he was saying to America that a new politics is emerging. It is Black, but it is also progressive. And indeed, that was the continuity of Black convention tradition that eventually led to his running for office as a candidate of the Democratic Party in its primaries, where he secured almost 7 million votes in 1988 and won 11 contests, and prepared the way for eventually the emergence of Barack Obama. You see, we must remember that he was a part of the continuity that goes back to 1970, 1972, then his own campaigns in 1984 and 88 that eventually led to Barack Obama in 2008. the continuity of the Black Convention Movement, the continuity of history, we must recognize the roles that his campaigns played and that his emphasis on continuing progressive Black politics was more than just, a passing happening. And so there was continuity there. And then in the next area that I think is a part of that legacy was that he opened the doors in some spaces we had not been before. He claimed that entertainment, sports, and the corporate sectors should be as much concerned for our policy at work as well as our advocacy as we were focusing on the public sector. He shifted our emphasis somewhat to say that there are other aspects of American life that we should actually focus on, and he achieved enormous successes, not just the Black Expos, but he sought parity. He sought parity in the resources, parity in the jobs, parity in the boardrooms. He made those contributions more than any of our current leaders had ever done. So those new sectors were sectors that he accessed and opened up to us in a way that we had not seen before. That was an enormous contribution to his legacy. And the final one that I see is that he practiced an ideology of participatory democracy and inclusion in a way that did not seem to be ideological. It was an ideology, but he was not perceived as an ideologue, and he was not perceived as narrow. He was able to cross over boundary lines that others had previously been unable to include in their thought process in such a way that I think he showed us a little bit in an elegant way of how he blended bits of the past movement leaders, such as a little bit of Douglas with a little bit of Du Bois, a little bit of Booker T, a little bit of Garvey, a whole lot of Martin, flavored with a big old toast of Malcolm. And the contributions that he has made will always be indelibly imprinted in the legacy of our people, the legacy of our struggle, that he coupled nationalism and democracy in a smooth and seamless manner. And it is still present in a new paradigm today, in a new mixture today, that is flourishing as a direction for our future. We say asante. Thank you very much to the country preacher, to Sweet Jesse. Long may his legacy live, and long may those of us who are still engaged in active struggle remember his contribution that have indeed outlasted him, will continue beyond him, and have been, I think, indelibly imprinted into our people's social consciousness and the historical understanding of transformation from the position that we have been in as a powerless people into an empowered people. So for that, we say blessings be and hallelujah that he came this way and he is still marching on that journey now, for which we give him our eternal thanks and our gratitude in the spirit of Martin and the spirit of Malcolm.
All right. That is Dr. Ntongolizi Sanyuka. Appreciate it so much. I didn't realize we were not going to be able to have phone calls. You went over a little bit longer than I would have let you go, but you had it all wrapped up nice and tight, and I could let you flow. It was by providential intervention that we were able to do that. And I think Reverend Jackson is really going to enjoy this whole package of tributes, and I think your summation, which is intentional because I wanted you to wrap it up, I think you did it extremely well and brilliantly. So thank you so much for your contribution, and I'm sure Reverend Jackson is going to appreciate it too. All right. Okay, so we have, I really didn't realize we were not going to have callers. I really had hoped that we would hear from our audience on this. So we got some extra time. So here's what I need to do with the extra time. Some people may not have heard. I'm gonna ask our Reggie to go back, and let's pick up with the first excerpt. The first excerpt that we played, "Rocks Just Laying Around." Let's get that in, and then I'll make some comments and observations to close it out. But let's go back to that first speech that we heard from Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson on this tribute to the genius of Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. We've heard, again, from Fire Rose to Ray. We heard Dr. Julianne Malvo, Barbara Arnrine, Rick Adams, Baba Greg Akili, and of course, we just heard from Dr. Ntongolizi Sanyuka. Let's now hear from Reverend Jackson himself, with the rocks just laying around.
Eight Democrats running for the nomination. This time around, you got a chance and you got a choice. You want somebody who marched for you to get the right to vote. You got a choice. You want somebody who challenged corporate America to hire you and give you contracts. You got a choice. It's choice time. All this talk about qualification. What the blacks know about foreign policy. It's an insult. I was 3 years old. I came into my consciousness. My daddy was coming home from the war. Foreign policy. If he was so dumb, how'd he get over there and get back? If he didn't know foreign policy, why'd they give him a gun? And when they gave it to him, he knew which way to shoot. We know foreign policy. When you buy Honda and Toyota, that's foreign policy. Russian vodka, that's foreign policy. Panasonic and Sony, that's foreign policy. Mercedes-Benz, that's foreign policy. As a matter of fact, we came here on a foreign policy. Yeah! I know y'all in a hurry. I'm gonna leave it now. It's time for a new course. A new coalition, a new leadership. Somebody got to rise above race, rise above sex. A new leadership, a choice, a chance. Don't cry about what you don't have, use what you got. Reagan won the last time, not by genius. Reagan won when we were asleep. He won by the margin of despair. He won by the margin, the fracture of our coalition. He won by the margin of racial division. He won by default. I close with another story. There's a little shepherd boy named David.
All right, sir.
Everybody in town was scared of Goliath.
Yeah.
Philadelphia, your time has come. Don't stop at the mayor's office. Go on higher. Because you must never forget that about the time we began to take over cities, Nixon shifted the power to the suburbs. And now Reagan shifted it to the states. So you got mayors with more and more responsibility and less power.
Yeah.
We got more and more folk and fewer services. We cannot stop. We got to rise on higher. Little David. Took off his unnecessary garments. Little David. Didn't want to get weighted down with a lot of foolishness. Little David took what God gave him, a slingshot and a God biscuit, a rock. Our problem today is, David, we need to organize Pennsylvania and win because we're going to stop the rocks.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
It's been laying around and pick them up.
That's right.
In 1980, Reagan won Massachusetts by 2,500 votes.
Yeah.
There were over 100,000 students unregistered, over 50,000 blacks,
yeah,
over 50,000 Hispanics.
He won by 2,500. Ted Kennedy State. Rocks just laying around. He won Illinois by 300,000 votes. 800,000 unregistered blacks. 500,000 Hispanics. Rocks. Just laying around. He won. In 1980, 3 million high school students unregistered to vote. Now they've been registered to draft. Rocks. Just laying around. 11 million college students who could have chosen jobs over jails, peace over war, that didn't vote. Now they're crying. Rocks. Just laying around. Reagan won 8 southern states by 182,000 votes. But there were 3 million unregistered blacks in them same 8 states. Rocks. Just laying around. He won New York by 165,000 votes. 600,000 students unregistered. 900,000 blacks. 600,000 Hispanics. Rocks. Just laying around. 1980, Reagan won Pennsylvania by 300,000 votes. 400,000 students unregistered. More than 600,000 blacks unregistered. Reagan won Pennsylvania by the margin of despair, by the margin of the fracture of our coalition. Your time has come. Pick up your slingshot. Pick up your rock. Declare our time has come. A new day has begun. Red, yellow, black, and white. We're all precious in God's sight. Our time has come.
Wow, what a tremendous conclusion to this tribute to the Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson. Again, my apologies. Reggie and I, we communicate back and forth, and I missed some of the cues and whatever. I didn't realize I would have extended maybe the interviews with a couple of other people, but people got the point and whatnot. But I did want to hear from some of you in the listening audience. But we hope you appreciated the show. You appreciate what Reverend Jesse Jackson has contributed. But more than that, the lessons that were talked about in terms of his genius, not in some romantic way, not in some sentimental way, but in terms of the need, really, to see ourselves in a role of helping to rescue ourselves. And beyond that, really, in the spirit of Maat, the ancient Kemetic concept of justice to rescue the nation as well. WBAI will be, in fact, broadcasting on November 10th, a major town hall meeting that we're pulling together even as we speak. And in fact, I'm getting ready to record the public announcement for it. And I raised the question as to whether in the critical midterm elections, it will be the forces, the racists, reactionary forces of the white nastiness, MAGA, mad people of the orange man that triumph? Or will it be black voters, and black voters organized within a rainbow coalition that indeed will save democracy? So you'll be hearing about that town hall meeting. It'll be carried live on WBAI and also be carried live on WPFW in Washington, D.C. It'll be at Howard University on November the 10th. So you can tune in for that. Anyway, we thank you for listening. Today's show, a very special tribute. Our thanks to the management and program director for allowing us to do this. Again, at 6 o'clock, we're going to be listening to Sonia Sanchez. What a beautiful, beautiful tribute that's going to be. It is Vantage Point here on WBAI 99.5 FM in collaboration with YCERadio.org. This is the professor saying we'll see you again next week here on Vantage Point. Yeah.